Larry Burkett once said, "The one principle that surrounds everything else is that of stewardship, that we are the managers of everything that God has given us." Hi, I'm Rob West. We're stewards because God created everything and therefore owns everything. As stewards, we're to manage wisely the resources God entrusts to us. But how do we know we're doing that? Well, today I'll give you the 7 marks of a good steward. Then it's on to your calls at 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. This is Faith and Finance on American Family Radio. Biblical wisdom for your financial journey. Now, when Christians hear the word stewardship, we tend to think of money or even tithing, and obviously those are important, but stewardship involves much more than that. Jesus entrusted us with the gospel and gave us his immeasurable love by dying on the cross. As stewards of those priceless gifts, we're to share them with the world. So keep in mind that stewardship isn't just about money. So, what are the marks or characteristics of good stewards? Well, I've already mentioned the first. They acknowledge that everything belongs to God. They possess resources only temporarily to serve his purposes. They don't hoard or covet more. They understand that even the skills they possess to earn a living are a gift. Deuteronomy 8:18 reads, "You shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you the power to get wealth." In 1 Peter 4:10, "As each has received a gift, use it to serve one another as good stewards of God's varied grace." Next, good stewards fully understand the mission they've been given and how important it is. God has graciously given them a role to play in his plan, and they take it seriously, but with humility. They take comfort in Proverbs 16:3, "Commit your work to the Lord, and your plans will be established." A third trait of good stewards is that they are faithful. Now, of course, this means they are faithful in following God's financial principles, earning, saving, investing, and most importantly, giving. They are persistent and persevering. Jesus gives us some powerful words to consider in Luke 16:10 and 11 when he says, "Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with very little will also be dishonest with much." So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, who will trust you with true riches? This leads to our next characteristic of good stewards, which is that they are trustworthy. They're truthful and honest in all they say and do. Proverbs 12:22 warns, "Lying lips are an abomination to the Lord, but those who act faithfully are his delight." 1 Corinthians 4:2 also reminds us, "Moreover, it is required of stewards that they be found faithful." Next, good stewards are diligent. Jesus' parable of the talents in Matthew 25:14 through 30 illustrates that diligent stewardship involves actively using what God entrusts to us for his purposes, rather than neglecting or mismanaging it. This diligence reflects a heart committed to honoring God and fulfilling his call in every area of life. As Colossians 3:23 and 24 reminds us, "Whatever you do, work heartily, as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward. You are serving the Lord Christ." The sixth trait of good stewards is that they spend time in prayer, seeking God's will and his wisdom. James 1:5 reads, "If any of you lacks wisdom, let him ask God, who gives generously to all without reproach, and it will be given him." Good stewards rest in the peace of knowing that God will provide, freeing them from the burden of constant worry. Philippians 4:6 teaches, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything by prayer and supplication, with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God." And the final characteristic of good stewards is that they act when they feel the Spirit leading them. 1 Peter 1:13 says, "Therefore, preparing your minds for action and being sober-minded, set your hope fully on the grace that will be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ." So, those are the 7 characteristics of a good steward. They set a high bar, and it's clear that we can't meet them perfectly in our own strength. But the goal isn't striving. It's faithfulness through dependence on God. As we surrender to the Holy Spirit and allow him to work in and through us, he empowers us to walk in obedience. God's word reminds us that those who have been given a trust must prove faithful, and it's his grace that enables us to do so. Remember, as a steward, you have responsibilities, not ownership rights. And so enter that responsibility with joy, knowing that you've been given a high calling to be a money manager for the King of Kings. All right, we're going to take your calls next. That number, 800-525-7000. That's 800-525-7000. We'll be right back after this. Don't go anywhere.
For your walk with Jesus, I'm David Wolin with Haven Today, inviting you to anchor your day in God's Word.
When you turn on the news, it can be hard not to be discouraged. For most, not in living memory has there been more animosity, dysfunction, and a sense of hopelessness in our world. But for many brothers and sisters in Christ today, there's even more. They face bodily persecution for the sake of Christ. But Jesus brings good news. Deliverance is coming. And in one sense, it's already here. Paul writes in Galatians, "Grace and peace to you from God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ, who gave himself for our sins to rescue us from the present evil age." So take heart. Jesus has rescued us, and he will bring us safely home. You'll see Jesus more clearly through time in God's Word. Visit getanchor.com.
Healthcare is complicated. It doesn't have to be. If you don't love how your health insurance works, maybe it's time to leave traditional health insurance behind. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers you flexibility. Enroll anytime. Choose your own provider. And select the program that fits your needs and budget. CHM is the original faith-based way of taking care of your medical bill costs. Learn more at chministries.org/faithfi.
As we've seen, consumer choices can affect corporate policies. For example, if you support men following your wife or daughter into women's restrooms and changing areas, you may choose to shop Target. But if you prefer a store where women can feel safe, you may choose to shop elsewhere. Target policy still allows men who identify as women into those places, so the AFA Target boycott continues. With enough informed choices, we could help Target return to better policies. Visit AFA.net.
We are grateful for support from Crossmark Global Investments. They are a faith-based firm with a goal of offering values-based investments to help align financial choices and faith, ensuring a portfolio that reflects what matters most. Crossmark does this through investment solutions that span the capital market spectrum, from large cap to small cap strategies, including equity, fixed income, and balanced strategies. They are led by industry veteran Bob Dahl, CFA, a regular guest on the Faith and Finance program. More information is available at crossmarkglobal.com.
We're grateful for support from Timothy Plan. For more than 30 years, they've served clients on a biblically responsible journey to invest in a way that honors God and gives dignity to people's lives. More information is at timothyplan.com. The investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses are contained in the prospectus and summary prospectus available at timothyplan.com. Mutual funds distributed by Timothy Partners LTD and ETFs distributed by Foreside Fund Services LLC.
Well, it's an honor to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. You know, we started today by talking about the seven marks of a good steward. And, you know, this idea of stewardship is a game changer when it comes to our financial decision making, because it really is the beginning point. It's the foundation of everything we do to manage God's money. I wrote an article on this in our new publication, Faithful Steward. It actually is launching this week. Our FaithFi partners, those who support the ministry at $35 a month, will get a copy in the mail. I can't wait for you to receive it. It's incredible. It's beautiful. The articles are really thoughtful. You know, Randy Alcorn is contributing, John Reinhart, John Cortinez, an article on money and marriage from Dr. Shanti Feldhahn, and so much more. I can't wait for you to see it. I think it's really going to be just a game changer for you. But the article that I contributed to this first issue is really around the life-changing implications of being a steward. You know, we started today by talking about the seven marks of a good steward, but there are real implications, because you see, when we understand that we're, as the New Testament describes it, a household manager of God's resources, think about that. You know, a household manager oversees a home on behalf of the owner. And in the same way, we manage God's resources. We own nothing. We're responsible, though, for everything under our care. And this, of course, extends beyond finances. I mean, this would include our time and our talents and relationships and more. But the idea is that everything we have is God's, and we must manage it wisely to bring Him glory. And the implications are many. I mean, I highlight several of these in the article, that stewards have responsibilities, not rights, that stewards are accountable. Romans 14:12 tells us that each of us will give an account to God for how we manage His resources. Did we use them to advance His kingdom, care for others, and reflect His character? Or did we waste them on selfish pursuits? Now, don't get me wrong. It's not wrong to enjoy God's provision, but to what end? Are we using it to fulfill a need that should ultimately be filled by God Himself as our ultimate treasure? Well, we all need to be asking ourselves that question. Stewards live with an eternal perspective. It's not about the temporal. Stewards invest in things with eternal significance, and that aligns with Matthew 6. Jesus says, "Lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven." Earthly wealth is fleeting, but how we use it can have an eternal impact. And as Randy Alcorn writes in the popular, very small, quick-read book called The Treasure Principle, if you haven't read it, I'd encourage you to do so. He says, and this is the big idea, you can't take it with you, but you can send it on ahead. Just a few more. Faithful stewards are faithful in small things. That's right. Luke 16:10 reminds us, "One who is faithful in a very little is also faithful in much, and one who's dishonest in a very little is dishonest in much." So we have to manage even the smallest resources with care, knowing that God sees and rewards our faithfulness. Stewards hold loosely and give generously. You know, that open hand posture allows God to take out, but also to put in. And I think that reflects the trust that we're to have in Him to provide our needs, and we reflect God's generosity at the same time. Last idea, stewards don't take credit. Luke 12:13-21, Jesus tells the parable of a man who hoards wealth, focusing on his possessions instead of being rich toward God. You see, that man takes full credit for his success. I mean, he says, "I and my," I think like 9 times in that very short story. He doesn't acknowledge God's provision. In contrast, I think stewards recognize that everything we have comes from God, and we give Him the credit for any success. So here's the big idea. By living as faithful stewards, we honor God as the true owner of all we have. In this mindset, it literally transforms how we approach our finances and our lives, leading to greater purpose and responsibility and even joy. And ultimately, how we handle money, well, it reflects our commitment to Christ and our trust in Him for all things. I hope that's an encouragement to you today, perhaps a challenging word for you today. I'm talking to myself at the same time. We all need to hear this from time to time. By the way, if you want to read articles like this one that I've referenced today and all of the others and have this new publication delivered to you quarterly, consider becoming a FaithFi partner. You can do that, faithfi.com. That's faithfi.com. Just click give. All right, we're going to head to the phones here in just a second. We do have lines open. This would be a great time for you to call. We want to transition into helping you manage God's money in light of the things that you're dealing with in your financial life right now, whether it's investing or debt, maybe it's your spending plan, you just can't stay on budget, maybe it's that pesky credit score, whatever it is, you can call right now. Lines are open. Here's the number, 800-525-7000. Again, that's 800-525-7000. We'd love to hear from you. We're going to begin today in Illinois. John, go ahead, sir.
Hey, appreciate your ministry, Rob.
You.
And question on behalf of our spiritual son, about $4,000 in the hole with four payday loans.
Mm. Yeah.
And wondering if the Christian credit counseling group that you recommend can help him.
Yeah, you know, this is a tough one, John. We've got to break this cycle. I mean, the average interest rate for a payday loan is, you know, would just blow your mind because
these are short-term.
Yeah. Well, they're short-term, and so they don't sound as bad as they are. But when you run them out, you know, over a year, I mean, this can be just astronomical. You know, it can run maybe, you know, 300% to 500%, some even exceeding 600%. 100% annualized. So I think, yeah, your work to come alongside him to understand just how this needs to go away and we need to find other solutions is key. Of course, yes, we want to deal with the debt that's owed, but the underlying issue around him being able to live within his means, especially once he gets out from under this, being able to have a spending plan that balances so he's not ever forced to go back to these types of things again, or even as bad as credit cards on are, you know, to go to the credit cards. Yeah, I would reach out to Christian Credit Counselors, ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Where they really shine is with credit card debt, and here's why. You know, they can just slide you right into an existing program where that interest rate, where it's instead of 600%, it's 23%, but that's still not good. That's going to drop to between 0 and 8, typically, in some cases as high as 12. You send one monthly payment. You know, these loan sharks that offer these payday loans, they're not set up to work in quite the same way. You know, they know they've got you and they're going to get every dime out of you, but at least perhaps they can engage with the payday loan company, you know, get the interest rate down. There's no guarantee, but at the very least he could send one monthly payment that fits into his budget just to one entity, knowing that they'd all be paid on time. And then the key would be whatever he can do to dial back his spending so he frees up margin, because we're going to want to send as much to that as we possibly can to get that principal down, you know, out of every paycheck. John, I'd be happy to offer, just as our gift to you and him, one of our certified Christian financial counselors. We'll cover the cost, but essentially what this trained godly stewardship professional would do is come alongside him to help him look at that budget and help put a plan in place, maybe, you know, look for areas to dial it back, maybe give some creative ideas on how to set up the budget and maintain it on a monthly basis. Do you think that's something he would take advantage of?
Well, you know what? There's no harm in trying.
Yeah,
I helped him try to budget the first time, but yeah, that's a great offer. Do you have time for one more quick question?
I do after the break. So you stay right there. During the break, we'll get your information and we'll get the certified Christian financial counselor connected with you so you can make the introduction. As long as he's willing to use it, we'll be happy to cover the cost. Stay right there, John. We'll get your next question after the break. This is Faith and Finance. Stick around.
What we believe about the Bible is based on what we believe about its source.
The God Who Speaks, the award-winning documentary from the American Family Association, is now available in a special limited edition DVD set. This release includes a Sunday school curriculum and 2 hours of additional footage. Go to thegodwhospeaks.org to get your copy today. thegodwhospeaks.org.
FaithFi is grateful for support from One Ascent. One Ascent believes that your values inspire why you invest and how they can inspire how you invest. One Ascent's goal is to provide solutions designed for every need and invest in businesses that bless the people and places God has made. They want to help investors do well by doing good, to explore a new way of investing that aligns with your values. More information is available at oneascent.com and by clicking Analyze My Investments.
The American Family Association's mission is to inform, equip, and activate individuals to strengthen the moral foundations of our culture. Our goal is to be a leading organization in biblical worldview training for cultural transformation. We stand on the biblical truth that all human beings, including the unborn, are created in the image of God and are endowed by Him with the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Thank you for standing with the American Family Association.
Do you feel like your hands are tied with debt, preventing you from serving God? If you have credit card debt, Christian Credit Counselors can help. Through our debt management program, we can get you out of credit card debt about 80% faster while honoring your debt in full. For more information on how Christian Credit Counselors can help, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org. Or call 800-557-1985. 800-557-1985.
I'm Chelsea Wildman, Associate Director of the AFA Foundation. Occasionally, there are those that have a more complicated financial situation. If that's you, we would love to set up a phone consultation with our team and Rob West, host of FaithFi on American Family Radio. We will go over your specific situation. If you are interested, please give us a call, 1-800-326-4543, extension 345, or you can visit us at afafoundation.net.
As the leading advocate for the Christian financial industry, Kingdom Advisors serves the public by promoting the integration of a biblical worldview across every aspect of the financial services industry. And we serve a growing network of thousands of Christian financial professionals, equipping and empowering them to carry biblical financial wisdom to their clients, peers, and community. For more information, visit KingdomAdvisors.com. That's KingdomAdvisors.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. We've got some lines open. We're taking your calls and questions today. That number to call, 800-525-7000. Again, that's 800-525-7000. You can call right now. We were talking to John in Illinois before the break. He's helping a friend out, trying to get him on track and out of some payday loans. John, I know you had a follow-up question. Go ahead.
Yeah, there's a host here in that same area I'm at. About to retire. They're giving him a severance, $3,000 a month for 6 months, starting in at the end of March. Okay, when he's forced to retire, 64 years old, and just wondering, he's got, I don't know how much he's got in his IRA, but through the company, but he's got probably about $10,000 worth of debt. I'm estimating. What would you suggest he do as far as, I mean, obviously pay the debt off, but as far as rolling over the IRA, keeping it, and then handling that $3,000 severance a month.
Yeah. So a couple of thoughts here, but a question first. So he's got severance. Is this a transition into retirement, or will he go back to work?
Probably into retirement.
Okay. And the $3,000 severance, how long does that last?
6 months.
Okay. And then what are going to be his income sources at that point?
I think that would be one. And then, I believe he's trying to, he said he's got some way to work out Social Security.
Okay.
I don't know. He's only 64, but that's, that's what he said.
Yeah. So that's key. I mean, we need to look at this 6 month severance as, you know, just what it is. It's temporary and we can't build a plan around it. I would say the best use of that money would be to get out from under the credit card debt, so long as he's got a plan not to go back into credit card debt and we fix the problem that got him there. And then he needs to start working during this 6 month period to figure out, can I live on Social Security alone? Because if he can't, then the only other option is consider some part-time work. Or thirdly, and maybe a combination of the three, but thirdly, begin drawing an income from the IRA. How much is in the IRA?
That's what he didn't tell me that yet, but okay. I'm gonna guess $100,000.
Okay. Yeah, so we would only, if you want to try to allow that to last, I mean, you could start with a 4% withdrawal rate, but that's only $4,000 a year. So that's going to give him another $350 a month, roughly. So the question would be, you know, he doesn't need to roll it anywhere. The IRA can stay right where it is. The question is, who's managing it? Let's make sure we have somebody that can, you know, give professional oversight to that IRA. And I think the starting point would be to say, okay, if you were debt-free, which means you take the $18,000 you're going to get over the next 6 months, you pay off the credit card debt, and we take the rest of it and we shore up his emergency fund so he's got, you know, some liquid margin. I'd love for him to have at least 6 months worth of expenses. Then the question would be, could he live on Social Security, recognizing he's going to have to take it early, which means it's going to be reduced, you know, probably as much as 25% if he's taking it 3 years early. Could be a little less than that. Social Security at a reduced level, plus in my example, if it's $100,000 in the IRA, $350 a month, as long as it's invested to make that up over time. And if he can't, then we've got to either, you know, continue to work so that he can continue to build Social Security toward his full retirement age benefit, or, you know, look for some other option. Does that make sense?
Super. Thank you. Yeah. And he could use Kingdom Advisor. I've talked to him about that. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could find a CKA to manage the money at faithfi.com. Just click find a professional. Hey, John, thanks for calling, sir. You sound like a great guy coming alongside some friends, helping them to manage their money wisely. Maybe there's a ministry here in this for you as well as you serve other people. Thanks for calling today. Call anytime. 800-525-7000 is the number to call. We've got some lines open. We'd love to hear from you with whatever is happening in your financial life today. Again, that number right now, 800-525-7000. You can call. Let's go to Texas. Hi, Grace. How can I help?
Yes. Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question that has like several parts to it. So if I'm trying to start a service-based business business idea to serve the Christian community or greater community on multi like levels, like for education choice, like serving the elderly. I don't know if it's for or nonprofit is better. I've researched and looked at things, and it's looking like it's easier to do a for-profit because of just the how the concepts of the business are working in my head and on paper right now. And yeah. Then if someone wants to donate, this is question two for the cause, what are the implications for a for-profit? And then third, what are the steps of registering a business like this, and whose help in the financial community can I recruit or, seek?
Yeah. Very good. Well, I love the direction you're thinking. Clearly, you have a heart to serve, and that's awesome. And, I think making this decision here at the front end on for-profit versus nonprofit is really key because you want to get that right. So a few thoughts on that, and we're going to hit a break here in a second, and maybe I'll pick it up on the other side. But, when it comes to this decision, there's obviously pros and cons for both. With the nonprofit, the biggest opportunity you have is the ability to take, contributions that would be, or donations that would be tax deductible for the donors. And that's a big plus, because if you really are seeing a lot of this is not only just from the fees you generate for the services you're providing, which you can still do for a nonprofit, but you feel like donations are going to be a big part of this, you're really taking that off the table when you go for-profit, because people just, not only do they not get a tax deduction, but very few people are going to donate to a for-profit just because if you end up with extra, you as the owner can take that profit out for your own purposes, which you can't do for a nonprofit. Now, there is more complexity to setting up the nonprofit. We'll talk about how you do that. And there's some complexity in terms of the oversight as well. Let's do this. Stay right there, Grace, and we'll pick it up after the break here in our final segment. We'll be right back.
In rural Malawi, baby Esther was taken in by her grandparents when her mother died. Resources were scarce, and Esther suffered from malnutrition for years until God transformed her life. Today, through Cross International, Esther receives nutritious meals, drinks clean water, and is taught about the hope found only in Jesus. But other children are still waiting. Make an eternal impact on a child now with a $62 gift at crossinternational.org/faith.
Fostering and adoption is not a band-aid for infertility.
Nope,
like it is a calling, and God can change the desire of your heart and make that so rewarding. It's the most beautiful, selfless thing. It's pure religion, but it's not a fix to I desire biological child. God has to deal with that in your heart separately.
Hannah's Heart, encouraging couples through infertility and miscarriage. Saturdays, 4 a.m. Central on AFR or on the AFR app.
Faith and Finance is grateful for support from Sound Mind Investing. If you have money in an investment account, you know sometimes the stock market can seem like a roller coaster. But it's possible to enjoy both profit and peace of mind as a do-it-yourself investor, no matter what's happening in the market. A short video webinar about that is available at soundmindinvesting.org. Financial wisdom for living well. Soundmindinvesting.org.
Are you searching for a way to become a better, faithful steward of the resources that God has given you? Well, download the FaithFi app and join the 37,000 others who are already using our app. The FaithFi app will provide you with wisdom, community, and simply help you stay on track with your finances. We have three money management options to choose from, so find an option that fits your unique needs. It's available on desktop or mobile. Simply go to faithfi.com and click app to get started.
When you hear this,
this is American Family News.
You know what follows is the truth. Your news from a Christian perspective.
Hundreds of teachers are going to have to walk into that school building and they are forced to swallow political ideology that in many cases violates their very faith and conscience.
If you miss it at the top of the hour, American Family News podcasts are available at afn.net. And sign up for our daily news brief at afn.net.
You're young. You don't go to the doctor that often. Yet health insurance is still so expensive. If your health insurance costs too much, maybe you should switch to an affordable alternative. Take charge of your healthcare with Christian Healthcare Ministries. CHM offers programs starting under $100 per month. Check off the affordable box on your list and get back to what you really love, running your business or caring for your kids, and have peace of mind while doing it. Visit chministries.org/faithfi to enroll today.
This is American Family Radio, a listener-supported ministry of the American Family Association.
So glad to have you with us today on Faith and Finance here on American Family Radio. I'm Rob West. We've got room for you. If you have a financial question today, now's the time to call 800-525-7000. You can call with your name or you can be anonymous, and we'd love to tackle whatever's going on in your financial life, give you some encouragement and hopefully some practical steps rooted in God's wisdom for you to make a clear decision or choice with whatever you're wrestling with today. That number again, 800-525-7000. Before the break, we were talking to Grace. She is praying about starting a business to provide education choices and support and help, or even around the house, for the elderly there in her community, a multi-service business. And she's wrestling with, should that be a for-profit or a nonprofit, and who should she go to help put that in place? And what I was saying before the break was, Grace, you know, clearly making this decision on the front is important, because there are, you know, pros and cons to each. A nonprofit has to exist to serve the public's purpose, and it reinvests any profits back into its mission. So that's the big kind of difference here is, you know, you can't take any profits for yourself beyond a reasonable salary, and you are going to have a board of directors, or you would need to have one, which limits your autonomy. But the you know, upside is, you know, they tend to have more of a missional focus, because they really exist to serve the public, and you have the ability to get not only grants, but donations that are tax deductible for the donors, so exempt from federal and state taxes because you would be a 501c3. There is more costly to set up, and, you know, you do have some regulations and oversight with how you handle it, and then record keeping and annual filings. The for-profit business is going to give you more flexibility in terms of generating and retaining profits without restrictions, how you pay those out to yourself and others beyond just that reasonable salary, more autonomy because you have full control over the business decisions without a governing board. And then it's just a simpler structure. It's easier to set up and maintain compared to a nonprofit. But I think given your desire to serve here, you know, that's obviously key. If you did want to set up a nonprofit, I would encourage you to go to a CPA, typically. It could be an attorney, but I'd say typically a CPA who has an expertise in setting these up, who's done this before. Excuse me. And what they will do is help you fill out all of the information for the filing to the IRS so you can apply to get that tax-exempt status, which is going to require that you define your mission and you choose a name and you appoint your board of directors, and you're going to have articles of incorporation and bylaws and all of those pieces. And then you're going to have to, you know, put, you know, register for fundraising, because if you're soliciting donations, you'll have to register as a charitable organization. So there's a lot of steps there to not only get the corporation set up, but to get that IRS determination that you are a 501c3, and you really want somebody who has some expertise and experience that can put all that together for you, and you would just provide the information at their direction. But I know I've thrown a lot at you. Give me any follow-up questions or thoughts you have.
Thank you. All that was very helpful. I wrote down everything, and I think I hear you saying that based on the service aspect of a servant's heart, because it is, that's what's driving it and continuing to, I feel the Lord continuing to call me to do this. It's over maybe a year and a half. And that being predominant, it sounds like it's more beneficial to do the nonprofit.
Yeah.
Even though my simple mind and non-business mind is like, oh, I want it to be simple, so yeah, just do the for-profit and get it over with.
Yes.
I need to be careful and do the, make sure I'm doing the right thing. So
yeah,
I'll reach out to a CPA.
Okay, good. Yeah, I mean, here's what I would say to that, and I think you're on the right track. I might, see before you go through the time and the expense of putting it together. I know this is a burden on your heart, but if a big part of your business model is donations, and it doesn't have to be exclusively, you can absolutely charge for your services so long as you understand the profits have to stay in the nonprofit and go to promote the mission of the organization, and you only take out a reasonable salary. So you can charge. But if you're seeing donations as a big part of this, perhaps before you dive into this and all the time and the expense and the complexity of forming that nonprofit, see if you can find a core group of people that might be willing to come around you who might share this burden and run this by them, because you're probably going to need, not only you're going to need a board of directors, but often for a brand new nonprofit, that board of directors, in addition to being a wisdom board, is also usually a funding board as well. And so you might look for some people that, you know, assuming this is the Lord's leading, and if it is, he's going to provide some people that buy into that vision as well and say, yeah, if you were to form this, you know, this is something that pricks my heart as well. I'd be willing to, you know, serve in a board capacity. I might even be willing to give you, you know, some seed contributions. Because if you don't, if that's a big part and you don't find, you know, a group of people that are saying, yeah, we would support this charitably, that might be, you know, a cause for you to at least stop and take some more time praying through it before you go all through all the steps of forming the corporation and trying to get the nonprofit status and all of that. Does that make sense?
It does. And the only reason I think it'll be people may want to jump on, or, you know, for meaning donations, people would want to donate, is because of the cause and being multifaceted, and, you know, the outreaches from young to old and mothers and homeschoolers, and just it's different because I'm a homeschool parent, and I've just heard the need over, and it's been a burden for myself in general. And then I keep hearing it. And so I know, or I feel that people will want to do that, donate for the cause. And that's what made me call in and say, well, if that's the case, then, you know, in a for-profit may not, I just want to know what that does. Like,
yeah,
you know, what are the implications of taking,
yeah,
donations and you're a for-profit? I don't know.
Well, you really can't with the for-profit take donations. Number one, it wouldn't be a charitable deduction for the donor. But number two, very few people are going to donate to a for-profit because there's just not any restrictions on how that money can be used. You could take 100% of that out for your own purposes. And so even though you'd say, well, I wouldn't do that, but that's just the way the business is set up. There's no kind of oversight that requires the donations to stay in the organization for the extending the mission of the organization. You can use them however you want, including them taking them out personally. So that's why I think if you really are planning on taking donations to drive this, you really do need to go the nonprofit route. But again, I would confirm that. I mean, it's one thing to think, yeah, I'm confident there'd be a lot of people that would be interested in this. It's another thing to approach some people and just say, hey, will you give me some feedback? Would this be something you'd be interested in supporting? And I would have a mission statement and a vision statement And I'd have a, you know, an executive summary of your goals and programs and impact. I would give them a sense of who's the leadership team going to be and the legal structure. I might even, you know, have a needs assessment in there where you identify a problem statement. What problem are you trying to solve and who is your target population? And, you know, what kind of market research have you done to determine that this is a real need? And then a little bit of information on the programs and services you're going to provide. I mean, I'd put all of that together with your fundraising and financial plan and share that with some folks and make sure that they're with you. And then if so, I think nonprofit might be the way to go. Thanks for your call. We'll be right back.
As a nurse, I primarily work with children who are abused and exploited in trafficking, and I frequently see very unfair situations. We must talk about the issue of abuse. We can't base our actions on fear. We have to be faith-informed in what we do.
The Dr. Nurse Mama Show. For more from Dr. Jessica Peck, tune in at 2 p.m. Central on American Family Radio or on the podcast page at AFR.net.
Even the problems we face along the way in life that challenge us, when they happen to a believer, only make that believer appreciate even more what it's going to be like when we know and see the Lord.
Don't miss Dr. David Jeremiah's message, A Living Hope, on the next Turning Point Weekend Edition.
Listen to Turning Point, Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock Central on American Family Radio.
We're grateful for support from Movement Mortgage, who provides residential home loans in all 50 states. Guided by a mission to love and value people and a goal to redefine the mortgage process, Movement seeks to help others achieve their financial goals. You can find out more at movement.com/faith. Movement Mortgage LLC supports Equal Housing Opportunity, NMLS number 39179. For licensing information, please visit nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Have you ever wondered where your money goes when you deposit it in a bank? Christian Community Credit Union believes in helping advance God's kingdom through everyday financial transactions. For over 67 years, they have provided values-aligned banking solutions to thousands of Christians and ministries. Consider Christian Community Credit Union as your banking institution by visiting joinchristiancommunity.com. Membership eligibility required. Each account is insured up to $250,000. This institution is not federally insured.
Hey, thanks for joining us today on Faith and Finance here at American Family Radio. In our final segment today, I've got room for maybe one more question. If you have a financial question, something going on in your financial life today, call right now, 800-525-7000. Back to the phones to Indiana. Ann, thanks for waiting. Go ahead.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I have an HSA that I've had. I established it in 2006, and then I put into it for like 10 years, and then I got on Medicare, had to go on Medicare. And I have around 7.5 years of Medicare Part B premiums that were taken out of my Social Security payments each month for the last 7.5 years. And it's my understanding I can take those premiums out of my HSA, but I read online I read online that you can go retroactive. I could take all those 7.5 years, like this year, if I want to. Is that true?
You know, I would look into that. My understanding is that is not the case. Now, clearly, once you're 65, you can use HSA funds to pay for Medicare, you know, Part B and C and D. But you can't use it for any kind of Medigap or Medicare supplement, and you can't contribute to an HSA beyond age 65, but you can use it for the premiums. Now, where I think you need to get some information is, I do not think you can use it to pay back premiums you've paid in the past, specifically for Medicare. That's what I want you to get a little bit more information on, because that's not my understanding, although I'm not certain on that, and that's why I want you to check it out.
Okay. Well, the publication, you know, the Pub 959 is not clear on it either, but online, like Kiplinger, you know, and Schwab and all those are adamant that you can go back on it, and I can't find it anywhere, you know, in publication 969. So
yeah. Yeah. Do you normally file your own taxes, or do you have a CPA you could run this by?
I usually do my own. Yeah, I do my own.
Okay, yeah. So this might be the time where you just, this is important enough that reaching out to somebody who could give you, you know, a definitive answer on this, who's a tax professional, I think would be a good idea, because obviously that'd be real helpful if you could go retroactive and now you'd get all that money out tax free and you could use that to shore up your emergency fund or whatever else. But I'm not certain that's possible. I know moving forward, you could pick up those premiums with tax-free distributions along the way, and hopefully that'll help you moving forward for sure.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll try to find out if it's like an accountant or something.
All right. Very good, Ann. Thanks for calling today. I wish I could have given you more definitive advice on that, but we appreciate you being a part of the program. Let's go to Georgia. Hi, Mark. How can I help?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I am 57. My wife is 62. And we were wondering if she should go ahead and start drawing Social Security. We do not need the money for income. We would take 100% of that and invest it, and just didn't know what the drawbacks were of going ahead and doing that.
Yeah. So she's qualified under her own work record. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And she would take that at what age?
We were wondering about starting that now. She's 62, will be 63 this year.
Okay. Got it. Yeah. So she's going to, you know, take obviously a pretty big, you know, cut on that by taking it early. So it could be, you know, as much as 25% to 30%. And I'd love to see that grow. I mean, the difference is, yes, could you invest it and do better? Possibly. You know, I think one of the questions would be, just because you all are still working, more of it might be taxable versus later when you have, maybe you're fully retired and you don't have as much income. And so perhaps, you know, much less of it, if any, would be taxable. I think the second thing is you're going to get a guaranteed return by waiting, as long as you live long enough to reclaim it through the higher check. But, you know, you're going to get a guaranteed increase of, you know, nearly 8% a year by waiting until full retirement age, which there's no guarantee in the market. So I think that's why, I mean, you know, we don't know which is going to come out better. So we just have to make an educated decision. But if you, you know, expect to live, you're in good health, you know, and you expect just to have the longevity based on family history and your own current health status to live, you know, into your 80s and beyond, delaying those benefits increases that total lifetime payout. And that tends to be, you know, the better option.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome. We appreciate you calling today, Mark. God bless you, sir. 800-525-7000. I might be able to sneak one more question in today. Before we do that, though, interestingly, in the news today, and this probably won't come as a shock to you, the paper check is all but dead in the U.S. For more than a century, checks were the preferred way, of course, to pay for most things. Now, here's a study, and just came across this today, fascinating, by the personal finance site GoBankingRates. They found that nearly half, 46% of Americans, hadn't written a paper check in the preceding year. Now, as I think about my own life, I hardly ever write checks. I mean, maybe when, you know, a service worker comes to the house to repair something and, you know, they don't take a credit card, although most do now. And so you write them out a check. Really, the only time I can think of that I've written a check in the past year, there's one time a year where I write a check, and it's because our garbage people, when they come to pick up the Christmas tree every year, which we can put at the curb, I've got to write a $15 check, put it in a Ziploc bag, and literally attach it to the tree. And they come by, they grab the check, and they take the tree away. That's the only time I write a check each year, interestingly. Now, obviously, debit cards and smartphone apps have made it much easier to pay at the register and Online purchases, of course, have always been digital. Many major retailers, such as Target, have even stopped accepting paper checks, interestingly, for payment. COVID, of course, accelerated this trend with a huge increase in online purchasing, but it was well underway even before the pandemic hit. In 2015, Americans wrote 18.1 billion checks. By 2021, that number had dropped from 18 to 11 billion, almost a 40% drop. Now, in addition to debit cards, consumers are increasingly turning to digital payment methods. So this would be things like PayPal and Venmo and Zelle. So imagine soon nobody will be able to say the check's in the mail, although with online banking, there is still, even though you're just making a few clicks, the bank typically is still sending that paper check, but I think that's probably going to be replaced with a true digital solution end to end. It already is, but it will increase in the days ahead. What does all this mean? Not much, other than, you know, there's clearly convenience, expediency, even I think security that goes without these paper checks flying through the mail where somebody can grab them and get your account number. But there are trade-offs, and that means we need to use digital best practices when we're doing more and more business online, including, you know, making sure that you're not on public Wi-Fi when you're logging into these accounts. You keep your operating system on your computer or your smartphone up to date with all those security patches. Use long string passwords. I'd use a password manager. I use one called One Password. But there's a lot of them. LastPass would be another. But they'll actually generate, you know, a 15 or 18 or 20 character, you know, password for you and save it encrypted. And, you know, you could have a different password for every account, which is really the best practice there. Don't ever click on a link in an email or, you know, for a phishing scam or even, you know, give out your information if somebody calls you. Even if the caller ID says they're from a company you recognize, they can spoof that. So we've got to be on our guard, but I think there are plenty of benefits we derive from moving more digital, even though I know a lot of you listening out there today are saying, nope, I'm standing my ground. I still like to go to the bank. I still like to write checks, and I hear you on that. All right, we're going to round out the program today. Let's finish up in Arkansas. Ken, go ahead, sir.
Yes, sir. The other day I heard an elderly gentleman talking about his estate and passing it on to his kids. And I'm a real estate appraiser by profession, and I've seen the good and the bad from that as far as passing it on directly to his blood-related children. I think that's an excellent idea. However, the couple that had a piece of property that I ended up being doing an appraisal on decided to give it to their son and their daughter-in-law. And okay, this was second marriages for both of them. And lo and behold, it was a massive piece of property, probably over $500,000. And about 8 years later, their marriage didn't work out, and she ended up getting half of his parents' estate with that one piece of property. So I would recommend that you not put it in both of their names. And if the marriage works out, then she'll still get benefit from it, or he will. But once you put someone else's name on it, in today's society, it may not be good for everybody. So anyway, just a little.
Yeah, obviously you're speaking from personal experience here, Ken. When you say put their name on it, are you talking about in the will or the trust or a TOD deed, or are you talking about actually putting their name on the deed while the owner is, the grantor is still living?
Actually, they put it in their will.
Oh, okay.
The couple would receive equal benefits from their piece of property.
Yeah, yeah. And, well, you know, when it comes to wealth transfer,
they passed away.
Yeah. Well, it's a good point. When it comes to wealth transfer, I think there's a couple of overriding principles. Number one, who is the next steward? That's what you're praying through and asking the question. Are they, not only have they been selected, but are they prepared to handle it financially and spiritually? I think you need to think through who that person is. You're ultimately the one that makes that decision. And, you know, we need to really be thoughtful about how we go about that. By the way, the best book on making these decisions, in my view, is Ron Blue's Splitting Heirs. Not the mechanics, but the why. transfer. Ken, thanks for your advice today. God bless you, sir. We're so thankful for our team here, Devin, Sandy, and Jim. Couldn't do it without them. We'll see you tomorrow.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.